Well, to begin this homily, I want to begin with the second reading that Mel proclaimed for us from the letter to the Hebrews, because there's something in that reading that might not exactly sound like it comes together or equates. To remind you, we are a week away from Holy Week and from these great mysteries of the cross of Christ, and the cross is a hard thing to understand. So my preface for the homily is, it's okay if it's hard to understand. The cross in its nature is a contradiction and a stumbling block, in Greek, scandalon, right? It's something that makes us fall and in one way or another breaks us so that new life can come in, which is what Christ alludes to in that gospel that Deacon John just proclaimed. So we have this beautiful letter to the Hebrews, whose author we're not exactly sure who it was, someone like Paul or Paul himself. And it says that Jesus, the Son of Man, when he was in this world, he raised loud cries to the one who could hear him. And he was heard because of his reverence. It says, he raised loud cries to the one who could spare him from death. And he was heard because of his reverence. Here's what doesn't seem to equate. The Lord raises loud cries to the one who could spare him from death, and then this happened. He was heard because of his obedience, but he did indeed go to the cross and gave his life for us. So what do we do with that? Right? I think this is one of the biggest conundrums of a Christian, the problem of pain, the problem of the cross and of suffering, because the Lord at times allows us to embrace that cross. And we can learn, of course, some lessons about how to pray. So how was Jesus heard from his Father? I should make another preface. When we suffer, when we go through some sort of cross in our lives, we do a few different things. Well, obviously we suffer, and then our natural tendency is to decide who we're going to blame for it. Well, I'm going to blame somebody who made me suffer. Maybe I blame myself because I'm suffering. Or maybe we blame God as a father because he's letting us suffer. And sometimes there's actually no one to blame except the broken world in which we live that has been broken by sin and has been affected by sin, right? And so that tendency to decide who to blame actually puts us sort of on edge, maybe even a little aggressive, or even the other extent, which is despondent, and sort of lose our strength or our desire to live the life that God has called us to. So what does Jesus do? He instructs us how to pray. He lifts his prayer to the one who could hear him with loud cries and petitions. He knows the one who can hear him. Do you remember how Jesus did that in the garden? We're going to celebrate that in just 9 days. That Holy Thursday evening after he has celebrated the Last Supper, he goes out to the garden. He says 3 times to the Father over a course of probably 3 hours, Father, let this cup pass me by, but not my will, yours be done. Let yours be done. And this is the way he instructs us how to pray. We tell him where we're hurting, like good children, right? So he can tend to our wounds. And then at the end, we make this prayer of entrustment, or this surrender of what he wants to do with us and for us. The Lord is teaching us how to suffer our crosses. He's teaching us how to raise our prayers. He's also teaching us how to accept our crosses. Many of you have probably read stories or heard them of our dear Saint Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who lived a very special life. I don't know how well you know her story, but since she was a child, she had a very intimate relationship with the Lord, and she felt the call in her heart to be so close to him, and she talked to him probably like we're talking, like Deacon and I were talking in the sacristy before Mass, just one-on-one. And she felt this call to serve. She served as a sister of Loretto, and she was doing great things in the education system, helping to teach these young ladies how to believe in the Lord, how to pray, etc. And then the Lord put on her heart this very intense way of loving, which was inspiring her to never refuse God anything. And it was sort of aching on her heart to trust God so much she would never say no. And it was so It was so, you can say, intense, this desire, that she asked her bishop permission to make a vow. I would like to vow to the Lord, besides my vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, I want to vow to the Lord to never refuse him anything under the pain of mortal sin. Raise your hands if you would do that. Whoa, okay, right? This is Mother Teresa. And he gave her permission after years of discernment, and she made that vow, I will never refuse you because I trust you that much. That's how she loved the Lord. And how interesting, after she made that vow, then shortly after, the Lord put on her heart another ache, and it was probably even more intense than the other one, and it was to go and find those who suffered a suffering of darkness, who were forgotten, who were abandoned, who suffered in the slums of Calcutta. And he actually asked her to leave that order of women, the Sisters of Loreto, and to begin her own work. And she's like, but Lord, aren't we doing good work here? She's like, isn't this great? And the Lord's like, oh, I actually have more that I need you for, that I've made you for. And so she's sort of bargaining with the Lord, like, but look at all the good I'm doing here at the school. And the Lord's like, will you refuse me this? Right? And she had made a vow. And she's like, no, but isn't this great here, right? So the Lord is working on her heart until finally it became clear in her own discernment through her own spiritual direction that the Lord was calling her to leave all things, to like be stripped of all things, and then to begin this foundation. And of course, we know the missionaries of charity have touched the hearts of men and women throughout the entire world. In her life, in her lifetime, they were in 102 countries. Talk about the Lord working in crazy ways. And who doesn't know her name? This little tiny woman who is probably this tall, right, from Calcutta, who served the Lord this way. And she would say, speaking of the cross, she would say, when we suffer in our lives, it's the good Lord who has come down to bend over us to kiss us. But because he wears a crown of thorns, sometimes we get pinched. And she would say that to those who are suffering. Once she had a woman in the hospital, and mother said this, you know, the Lord is coming down to kiss you, but maybe he pricked you with his crown. And the lady says to her, can you tell Jesus to stop kissing me? It's hard to receive the intimacy of the Lord when the Lord is crucified on a cross. And this is the mystery that we're going to celebrate these days. So let's come to the gospel now. What happens in this gospel? These Greeks, who probably either were somehow catechized by Jews where they came from, you know, and they went through Bethsaida where Andrew and Philip lived, and so they had commerce going through the Sea of Galilee. So they probably, well, obviously they spoke Greek, and they knew people who were familiar, like in trading and fish in this case, right? And they're looking for something more, and they were known to be philosophers who liked to ask the bigger questions in life. And their lives probably felt rather empty, and they're looking for more. And they hear about this rabbi, this master, who is preaching, who is teaching, and who is curing and doing great signs and wonders. And they find Philip, and Philip finds Andrew. And then the Lord comes to speak to them, and he says these cryptic words, unless the grain of wheat fall to the ground and die, it bears no fruit. He reveals to them the mystery of the cross. That it's only in dying can we have new life. And he says it's like that image of the grain of wheat, that if the grain doesn't die and it remains perfectly intact, then no nutrients can get in, no water from the soil, right? And it can't sprout and bring a new life. It's an interesting mystery that we find actually in nature, and he's sort of revealing it to them. So what do we do with that? Well, we can be that grain of wheat that's sort of resisting that breaking of our inside, that breaking so that God can come in. We can resist him. We probably don't have to ask for crosses in life because I'm sure there are plenty that we endure in one way or another. Welcome to humanity, right, that has broken by sin. But we can learn to be docile so that, you can say, the water of God's grace can penetrate and grant us life. And I'm going to end with this image, since we are here at St. Peter's, and he's my second favorite apostle. Hope he's okay with that, since Deacon knows John is my favorite apostle. But I do love St. Peter dearly. and I've had the privilege of being in the Holy Land many times with pilgrims, Peter learned these lessons the hard way. The greatest gift of Peter's heart was that it was enormous and he loved the Lord with sincerity. And his love for the Lord was total. It was like, everything I have is yours. Where he struggled was where his understanding stopped. He's like, well, why should you go to the cross? No, far be it from you. And the Lord's like, get behind me, Satan. Right? Do not stop from doing the work of the Father. Even though Peter's intentions were well-intended, or at the Last Supper, you will not wash my feet, right? Peter says, because he doesn't want the Lord to humble himself before him, he says, well, if I don't wash your feet, you will not have an inheritance with me. And then Peter, typical Peter, well, then wash my head and my hands as well, right? He just jumps all in. Right? This is Peter. But Peter's greatest trial and his greatest cross, even though he was warned that he would deny the Lord three times before the cock crowed, he fell into that temptation because of fear. He was afraid of what he would suffer being associated with the Son of Man who was being crucified. He was condemned for crucifixion. And he says he does not know the man. Three times he denies him. He hears the cock crow and he weeps bitterly. But in Luke's gospel, it says the Lord looked at him. And that look was a look of love. And he knew he was forgiven. Precisely because he knew he was warned that he would be weak. The Lord knew it. He knew he was forgiven. But he still went out and wept bitterly for what he had done. And then in Luke's gospel, chapter 22, when we have the disciples coming back from Emmaus and they're knocking on the doors of the upper room and they say that the Lord has risen and appeared to them, those who receive them say, yes, he actually appeared to Simon. So Easter morning, Jesus appears to Simon Peter. And you can imagine that conversation. Pete, we knew it was going to happen, right? It's okay. I've forgiven you. And that was his very difficult lesson to receive that forgiveness. But the hardest lesson that I end with was in John 21, where Jesus is on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, and Peter doesn't know what to do at this point in his life. He's waiting for Christ to fulfill things through his ascension into heaven and then send the Spirit on them on Pentecost. And he's fishing, and he's not coming up with anything. He's probably grumbling under his breath over there. I can't catch a darn fish. And what do I do without Jesus? And the Lord appears there on the shore. He says, try the other side. They lower the nets and they bring in all these fish, 153 large fish, in fact. And then they go to have breakfast with the fish and the bread. And Jesus says, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And I imagine Peter choking on a fish bone. Why are you bringing that up, Lord? I thought we were good, right? And Simon Peter says, you know I love you. And Jesus says it again, Simon, do you love me? You know I love you. Feed my sheep, tend my lambs, three times, feed my sheep. What is Simon's last lesson? He has to forgive himself. He actually has to get over himself. He's so humiliated having sinned against the Lord that he holds himself accountable and he can't move forward. And Jesus is like, it's okay, we're done with this. Let it go. And now do my work. Let my love transform your life. And there on the shores where this happened, John 21, there's a beautiful statue of Jesus handing off his shepherd's crook, the baculum, right, to St. Peter, who's receiving the authority of vicar of Christ. Such a beautiful image. So today, just in summary as I conclude, the Lord is teaching us about the mystery of the cross. It is a hard mystery for our nature. That's why the Greeks were stumbling over it, and they had to understand this grain of wheat imagery. We all stumble with the cross. That's okay. But what do? Like Christ's words, when the Son of Man is lifted up, and I'll look to him, we will be healed. So he's teaching us as we prepare for Holy Week to look to him, to look to the cross. When we see the cross, do not look to a cross without Jesus. We look to a cross with the Lord on it who loves us to the extent of giving his life for us. And we trust that his mercy will transform us over these mysteries of the cross and resurrection. Amen.